Hello, hello. Wait, actually, you're introducing this, Danny. I'm stealing your thunder. I'm sorry.
No, keep it. We're done. We're going with this one.
This is the one.
Just because I'm starting topic-wise doesn't mean you can't start, Macklin. God.
I just wanted to greet everyone into the podcast and say hello.
Well, we're doing a podcast? What podcast, man?
The What Could Have Been podcast.
What could have been?
Episode 7.
It's chapter 7, actually.
Look how far we've come, boys.
Yeah, we've come a long way. Entered into a competition.
The Next Wave Spotify podcast competition.
Yeah.
We're not too sure exactly what we win.
We don't win much.
Yeah.
Not too sure, but you know.
I think we earned some learning.
I've been yearning for a learning.
Take us away.
Okay, so to begin with, we're going to talk about what could have been if humans still had prehensile tails. What a prehensile tail is, it's like a fifth limb, essentially. It's quite a lot of animals, relatively small, but there's a fair few animals that have one, specifically monkeys or New World monkeys that we know of. This can include like the howler monkey, spider monkey. But what makes it a fully prehensile tail is it has a little bare tactical pad, so a bit like a fingerprint or a bit like the skin of your fingers on the tail, like a little bit that has no hair, so it makes it like an extra grippy.
Well, I did not know that.
It's pretty cool.
It has a little bit of bear skin.
Yeah, and it's not strictly monkeys. There's quite a few different things. Or there's a few mammals. Well, hold up. I'm forgetting something super, super important.
Don't forget.
There's two types of prehensile tail. There's a fully prehensile tail and a partially prehensile tail.
Mm. Okay, what's the main difference going on between these two prehensile tail types?
So the full prehensile tail is just more dexterous. It has more capability. Certain anteaters have them. There's something called a binturong.
A binturong?
Kinkajou.
That just sounds rude.
Yeah, some pretty cool.
That sounds like something from Star Wars. That sounds like the binturong would be found in Mos Eisley canteen.
Oh, shut up, you binturong. It actually looks a little bit like you'd see it there, to be honest. It looks pretty crazy.
But so what is it? Is it a mammal or...?
It looks like a beaver's, like, drunken cousin. It's like a monkey and a honey badger had a baby and the binturong was born.
A binturong?
Oh.
So it looks like a raccoon on crack.
It's also known as a bear cat, apparently. It's not scientifically true, but...
Bear cat?
The common bear cat. Is in Southeast Asia.
So this thing has a prehensile tail.
Yeah, it has a fully prehensile tail. Yeah, man.
It can... So it's got an extra limb to tear havoc on its cocaine spree. Jeez. Get a leash on him, it's wild.
Danny, can only mammals have prehensile tails?
Well, I was literally about to ask a question. Guess the only non-mammal that has a prehensile tail.
I'm thinking chameleon.
Nah.
Not chameleon. I thought that they've got quite a sturdy looking tail.
Think of something similar to an ocean pony.
A seahorse.
Yeah. The long lost cousin of the ocean pony.
I wish that was a real thing.
What, an ocean pony? Yeah, no.
Is that not a real thing? It sounds like it could be.
Well, we're not talking about that.
Back to tails.
Back to tails, my friend. Yeah, you are right with chameleon, though, with a partially prehensile tail. There's a lot more things with partially prehensile tails. There's many snakes, for example, or that's more like a prehensile body, to be honest. It's like one big tail.
Yeah, the question is, where does the tail start?
And the body end. That's about it. But what if we had them? I don't think we'd have evolved from apes, because there ain't no apes got tails, man.
So you're implying that potentially we would be more monkey-like. We'd have to be more monkey-like. So we'd probably be a lot thinner.
The idea is, not even thinner, just say if we became humans, we became this form of ourselves, but originally from a monkey. The same pattern worked with apes, but we just didn't lose our tail, is the most basic thought. Because we could go deep into the genetics of where we were evolved in the phylogenetic taxonomic circumstances, or we could just say, we're us, but with a big tail. I want to talk about that.
That simplifies it.
Do you think we'd have a fully prehensile or a partially prehensile?
I think, like always, there'd be a divide.
You think there'd be a divide? Ooh, again.
Factionalism.
There has to be. I think there'd be a lot of different fashion trends when it came to the tail.
Think it'd be a fashion statement. Like how you do your hair. You'd make your tail. Maybe you'd dye your tail.
Yeah, exactly.
Ooh. Wow. Ooh. Dip dye.
Would you cover up your tail? Because if it was cold weather, you would want to maybe have like a sleeve over your tail.
Oh yeah, would it be hairy? Would you get tail pubes? Or would it just be like naked?
At the age of 15, you get your first tail pube.
There would probably be like snoods as well for your like prehensile tail if it's cold.
This is what I think. Yeah, you'd want to cover it up.
Or like a sock.
Like your fingers. Your fingers get really cold because they're vasoconstriction when it's cold to make sure your vital organs stay warm. So I think that in the cold weather, your tail would do the same thing. We're playing rugby or any sport in the winter and you hit your hands. Imagine you're there trying to use your tail and it's just numb. Oof.
Oh, mate, imagine if you were using it in the day or like you were using it. Because what I've been thinking is you're not going to be able to sit down, are you, if you get a big old tail. So if we're going to be dangling from things or like using our tail to lean on certain things, it'd be a lot harder if it was cold all the time. We'd have to like warm ourselves up or like slowly do it. Like you said, it would lack elasticity in the cold weather. Like it'd be stiff.
There would be some tail rubbing going on.
Ooh, a bit of tail rubbing. Oh, would we hold tails rather than holding hands?
Oh, wow, that would be nice. That's a really nice thought. Very wholesome.
Like in Avatar, when they have the weird hair sex.
Oh, sex? Should we talk about tail porn?
Matt, I think you took the reins on this one this time about the sex talk. Danny is surprisingly not.
You first. Planted the seed.
I've set him off now. I've set off the ravenous beast.
I was trying it with the tail rubbing earlier.
Just stroking me tail, mate. Don't mind me.
Oh, look at his tail. Oh, look at her tail. Ooh.
Such a nice tail.
Do you reckon your tail could get fat?
No, you're doing body weight exercise, like tail pull-ups.
Tail pull-ups. I think the tail would be quite a key part of beauty standards, wouldn't it? Like you'd want a nice, lush-looking tail.
Yeah, that.
Like how butts became part of beauty standards, you know, very kind of recently. Like tails would definitely get some of that special treatment. Yeah, you're right. But you're saying that they have like a bald spot, right? You're saying like for prehensile tails.
Well, that's for the monkeys, the New World monkeys.
I think they would get like hair transplants then, like the humans that have the prehensile tails, like. Oh, I hate my bald spot. It looks terrible. Please, I need to go to a cosmetic surgeon and get some new hair in, if that's even the right person you go to for hair addition services. I don't know.
But we're assuming that, sort of horrible thought, the fact that we've become hairless, we have hair on our head and our beard and obviously body hair a little bit, but we do not have to even remotely the same amount of hair as monkeys do at the moment. Would our tails be bald, do you reckon?
I was still debating this.
I think it'd be terrifying.
If your tail was growing as you grew, like any limb on your body, would it be naturally hairy to begin with? Because I've got a beard now, but I didn't to begin with.
Yeah.
Growth spurts. So different people have different length tails. So if you're really tall with a really stubby tail, you wouldn't be able to do much with it. But you could be like really short, but like with an abnormally long tail.
I think there probably would be some people with just like a rat looking tail, just a completely bald tail, or people with like kind of vaguely hairy tails.
Like different barbers for different tails. So like people, you could have dreadlocks in a tail, so it'd just be really matted fur, probably dyed really weird colours. It would probably stink a little bit as well, apart from that cheeky little bald patch. Or a nice clean cut.
But I think it would be similar to like legs and arms though, like Matt's saying. Do you really go and get much grooming? Like, maybe for girls it might be slightly different, but guys definitely don't have much like treatment on there.
But it's such a prominent feature, isn't it?
I suppose. Imagine like the industry of trousers. That would be different. You would have three leg holes, wouldn't you?
Well, one would be a tail hole.
Do you know those great trousers, like the dad adventure trousers, which can unzip at the knees? Maybe you'd have that for the tail part, so you could zip on the tail compartment.
You need different tail thicknesses, wouldn't you? You'd need like 34 long trousers with like a medium width tail. You'd have to have like the circumference of your tail as part of a measurement.
I could imagine like a travel advert. You want to get a tan for your tail this summer? Go on out to Mallorca. Like, I could imagine that kind of going on. Bring your zip along and unzip.
Your tail looking white and flaccid. Come to Mallorca. It'll be brown and stiff in a matter of minutes.
Slow motion unzipping.
Prehensile getaways.
Do you know that the likes of Sticky Vicky?
I don't know who that is.
Yeah. Sticky Vicky. So
which Danny famously went to with his with his parents at the age of 8.
No, when I was 4, my parents took me to watch Sticky Vicky. No, in Benidorm, there's There's a woman, or probably a collective of women, that call themselves Sticky Vicky, and she just does stuff with the vagina, like shooting ping pong balls out of it, pulling razor blades out of it, bottle opener or whatever. But I was just imagining if there would be a version with a tail.
Would stripper poles not be a thing? Maybe it'd be like stripper climbing frames.
Yeah.
Ooh, stripper climbing frames. They're dangling like Mission Impossible just from their tail, just like ooh.
Like chandeliers, but like really sexy chandeliers.
Ooh. Not based on gender, but in general, would tails be sexualized, do you reckon? If you went into like a business meeting or something, or you're being professional, maybe you would be allowed to show your tail. Maybe you'd have to like hide your tail.
Like, you can't get your cock out in the middle of a meeting. You can't get your tail out.
Well, it depends what kind of meeting it is.
Get your tail out of here. This is a business event. Do you have no shame?
We were just discussing next Monday's statistics and he just got his tail out. He had not been to Mallorca in months.
It was grossly offensive. Oh. It really, really, really dissatisfied the senses.
A bohemian act would be to just get your tail out. It'd be just like a sign of rebellion.
Yeah.
Why the? Like, I don't think it would. It shouldn't. It might be because we live in a weird world, but it shouldn't. People should just be able to use their tails freely.
Normalize tails. Normalize tails. Normalize tails.
Hitting a real niche market there.
That prehensile tail that you're describing would be so useful. Yeah, you could do loads. So I don't think we would stigmatize it.
There'd be people who had jobs specifically because they were good at, or they had like a dexterous tail in a specific thing. Imagine being able to use a drill with your prehensile tail. It'd be so sick.
Mm. I was literally just thinking of a drill. Just yeah.
Drill?
Yeah.
DIY.
That would be really sick.
I think just also like in war or like for fighting, that could be pretty interesting. Would we have, do you know how we have arm wrestles? Would we have tail wrestles? Who has the strongest tail?
Auto-erotic asphyxiation with your tail. It's like just strangling.
the scene from The Inbetweeners where Jay's there with the ham and the snorkel.
Sitting on his tail, yeah.
Your parents just walk in, it's like...
Don't look at me!
That would be a tragic, tragic sight.
Do you know how people like cross their fingers behind their back when they're about to lie? Mm-hmm. It's a standard trope in like movies and TV shows. Do you think people would cross their tails just to like say, yes, this is going to be a truce?
It's like tying a knot in it, wouldn't it?
Danny, in your research, did you come across any monkeys being able to tie their tails in a knot?
I didn't look for that sort of stuff, to be honest.
Has there not been any science research into that?
Funnily enough, no. Do you know when you lean on your arm, or you're like when you're stood there, you can lean on something, or you put like your weight in one hip, so you're putting more weight on one leg?
Yeah.
I reckon we'd use our tails a lot for resting. We'd just sort of lean back.
Mm-hmm. Well, a bit like what kangaroos do.
I think we'd do a bit of that, yeah.
Just the possibilities.
You can do things with it. You could just do, like, swig your pint, or you can like be eating a yogurt or something, having a pack of crisps.
Yeah.
Having some fruit, cooking dinner.
Would you like get attachments? Because you could put extra things on the end of the tail to help make it more useful.
Like a flail.
Yeah.
How would we actually like walk? Because this is the main thing that came up when I was looking at why we don't have tails at the moment. It's because of our move to bipedalism. How would you imagine that we would walk in this alternate reality, Danny?
I think we'd run like monkeys. I think we'd move about on all fours. To be honest, bipedalism, we believe, only evolved to get a better look across the savannah, like, or like in open areas. Because we can't actually move faster for being bipedal. In fact, monkeys move, I think it's twice the speed of us on average. I think I know that fact from somewhere. Sounds about right.
Sounds legit.
It's something like that. Anyway, they move a lot quicker than on all fours.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, man.
Well, imagine that. We would just be rapid, kind of Homo sapien-like creatures.
I'd like to think we develop the dexterity in our feet as well, that as much, because we'd be using our hands and feet. Not only the other monkeys adapted to have a prehensile tail, but they also use all of the other limbs a lot more, don't they? Mm. Like the hands also look like feet. We could have like an opposable thumb or like an opposable big toe on our feet, so we could grip things.
That could be quite interesting. Do you think we'd have shoes in this world? Or would shoes be redundant? If our feet hands are so useful. Yeah, maybe we'd have a lot more grass and stuff, because obviously we wouldn't want to tarmac up the world, because you want to be feeling nice grass on your feet.
Oh, we've already reached that point though, haven't we? Because there's too many of us to not have done that. Because we have to get about, and unless we had some sort of like monorail system where we didn't have to go on the floor, that could work.
Yeah, through the trees.
We could all just be hanging on inside. Yeah, through the... Well,
would we be like Tarzan? That's what I want to know.
We would have started in trees and then maybe developed structures within trees. And then perhaps from there, when we developed cities or like small colonies, we would have had them elevated so we could use our tails a lot more and be a lot more arboreal in our evolutionary timeline. Mm-hmm. So much so that our city development or our city design at the moment was similar to tree-based locomotion rather than walking or driving to each place. I'm not sure how the entire architecture would work, but I do feel like if we were getting around in a different manner, we wouldn't have the same architectural layout as our cities do at the moment.
Mm. Right. Cafes would be different, wouldn't they, in a way? Like, you couldn't have normal chairs for these prehensile tail humans. Everything would have to change. It's interesting that you say it would be like more swinging about and things like that.
Entrances wouldn't be on the floor. We'd utilize like windows and spaces like that a bit more because you could enter from.
Yeah.
We have a lot more verticality. I think it'd be quite interesting.
I feel like what we, rather than having seats, we'd work a lot more like suspending ourselves or not pressure points, what's the word, like structural, just using our tail to create a structural tension.
Mm-hmm.
Our tail would be like behind us on a pole, and then we'd be on sort of like a seat type thing, but just for our hands and feet.
I don't know if you really can know this. Would it feel like you're touching something as you would with your hands? Is it that sensitive as well?
As far as I'm aware, it can be that sensitive, or at least it was in monkeys, from what I read. Just because there's a tree pangolin that's got a fully prehensile tail. This cute little three-cuss white-bellied pangolin.
A tree pangolin? I thought they were ground dwellers.
Not the tree pangolin. That's an arboreal pangolin. My favourite type of pangolin.
Sounds like a pretty interesting boy.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that is a very, very thick tail.
Pretty sexy little creature, though, if I do say so myself.
Yeah, mate. They are quite prehistoric-looking, aren't they? Pangolins.
They're the only mammal with scales.
Yeah, they just look like
impressive.
Little balls of armour.
Yeah, that's why they're endangered, though, because people hunt them for their scales.
Classic. If it looks slightly unique, let's kill it.
It's because they have mystical powers of medicine.
Yeah, they do, mate. They cure everything, don't they? Just like rhino tusks.
Oh, it's just actually keratin, then.
It's just hair.
So we found out that we would start off with tree colonies and the beginning of...
No, we might. I'd like to think we would.
Oh, I think when the buildings got so big, then we'd probably be forced to move onto the ground, you know what I think? Do you think as like the structures got so big, the trees couldn't physically support? Or would we forever be in an Ewok-esque world?
I think we wouldn't live in trees forever. We'd begin in tree-based colonies, but then after that, we'd build buildings in cities like we have done and take the world into our own reins, but we'd just develop things in a different manner and like make them tree-like.
I definitely think we'd be a lot smaller as well, so maybe the buildings wouldn't have to be so big. If we're using our tails so much, then there would be a certain threshold of how big we could be.
Or you could just get an absolutely dense tail. You could just go to the gym and do some chin-ups and get your tail bigger.
Well, like 50% of your body mass would be in your tail because it's just so humongous.
Yeah, that's fine.
It'd be a massive climbing aid as well. That'd be cheating.
Oh, mate, we could climb so much more.
It definitely. I think there'd be competitions where you wouldn't be allowed to use your tail.
No tail, he uses tail. I seen it touch the rock.
Oh, he's cheating.
All right, I think there's another tales right there. There's one too many tales about tales.
The end of the tale. Comedy gold.
Yeah.
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 Right. Macklin, this is time. Is it earth shattering this week? Is it?
Yeah, kind of.
Classic Macklin style.
No, not really. Well, it's the earth will take it in its stride. So my question is, Mia, sound effect, please. What could have been if the megafauna of the late Pleistocene never went extinct? This is kind of grounded in like the North American megafauna. For those of you who don't know, megafauna are like the large animals, and it's a big club. Things like lions, the big cats.
It's a pretty mega club.
It's a mega club.
The megarist.
And it's like elephants and things like that. Obviously, they're not the extinct category, but you can think of things like mammoths, saber-toothed cats. Let me get some other examples up for you.
There's some ground sloths. There's some...
Giant otters.
There's so much. There's so many. There's different, loads of different things. A lot of armadillo. There was a bear that was huge. There's loads of different various cattle. There was a horse that was absolutely redonkulous.
Yeah.
A ridiculously big bison.
There's just so many interesting species. And the reason why I want to ask this question is because like it's almost as if we were that close to touching them. I'm gesturing with a very tiny, tiny amount with my two fingers to the guys who can see.
A whisper.
A little whisper. We are so close.
A wafer. It is only a wafer thin.
In terms of history, like we were so close to these big animals. And obviously we're part of the reason, I think, and a lot of scientists think, for their demise and like complete eradication.
It's kind of not consensual in the scientific community because there's always a little bit of backlash, but most people think it correlates in terms of when we migrated over there and all these guys diminishing.
Yeah, so I'll get into like what I'm thinking, but what's your question, Matt? Because it sounded like a burning question.
Well, it's more just why was early man so focused on killing the big animals?
See, there's a lot of debate about that. I don't think they were focused on killing the big ones. It's just that bigger animals, because they usually have longer gestation periods and they take a while to get their population levels to a certain degree, and then the sexual maturation of individuals tends to be longer. It just has a knock-on effect when you start taking some of those bad boys out.
They're literally just having less children. Don't they only, like, well, with elephants, they have, what is it, one or two children? They don't have that many. Like, you can see the lineage, like, the grandmother, the mother.
Yeah, yeah, like, that's what I mean, because it is such a demand on the body and such a demand to build such a large animal that it's not exactly easy to build a diminished population, and so much so a diminished population that's still getting hunted down, or supposedly still getting hunted down. And equally, then it just means they're more open. It's, say if there was, I don't know, what were they called? The one of the mammoth names, it was like, Mastodon?
The Mastodon.
The American Mastodon.
Yeah.
What, Manny? Manny from Ice Age?
Just loads of Mastodons. Yeah, Manny. So say if those of them died and there was only a small amount of them, they may be in competition with a different woolly mammoth of a bit larger size. Or what are you going to say, Matt?
It's interesting that you bring up that mammoth, or just mammoths in general, because there was, up until 3,000 or 4,000 years ago, a small little grouping of mammoths on an island. It's like near Russia, quite close to Siberia. I can't remember the name of it right now. I apologize. But basically, they had real problems towards the end of their life with kind of genetic problems because they were interbreeding with their own family members too much. I mean, this is going to kind of feed into what you're going to talk about next, Matt, but I'll just say it now. But these animals actually lost their sense of smell, according to researchers.
Spoiler alert.
Who are looking at their remains. Mm-hmm. Yeah, spoiler alert, sorry. But, you know, it's quite interesting in that the gestation period would be the main thing that killed these big animals off, but that's kind of like a good little case study.
And the human people would be the main reason why they die.
Yeah. So I'm going to try and remove the human element. I'm going to give a big shout out to a Reddit user who gave me the solution to this concept of the megafauna not going extinct. This guy is called Swasher, or girl, was called Swasher123. In this timeline, the Bering Strait was covered by water at a far earlier point in time. Therefore, people from Asia never migrated to North America, and Native Americans never existed. This means that overhunting does not kill off the giants of the Pleistocene, along with a little climate magic, of course. Otherwise, things progress normally in Europe and the rest of the world. Explorers from Europe in the late 1400s set sail and first reached the New World. They had heard Viking legends of beasts in a land across the ocean, but everyone passed those off as silly myths. What the men found in the New World were lions with two fangs, the length of a man's forearm, and bears the size of small homes. God, that is quite big. It's quite scary.
Go on, carry on.
Sorry, it's nearly finished.
I'll talk about the bear in a minute.
They quickly returned to Europe to tell of such beasts found across the Atlantic. The king and many other wealthy men put up large rewards for anyone willing to subdue, capture, and return specimens of these creatures to Europe. This started what was known as the Beast Rush of 1493.
Of course.
Hunters from across Europe headed across the ocean and used whatever funds they had to make their journey. This is where he kind of goes grammatically off the scales, but headed across across the ocean. No, that's not it. Sell the animals to the highest bidder, sometimes dead and sometimes alive. There is a bit more.
You think that we definitely would start exploiting these animals? Would it not be a harmonious existence?
I think we would exploit them.
Well,
100%. I don't know. We would want like megafauna zoos. I was thinking if we never went over there, it would be much better because they'd be pretty cool. Did you come across a bear that became extinct? Because I did.
Was it the flat-faced bear? Was that his name?
It's common name. No,
it's non-Latin name.
Its Latin name is Arctheotherium. Oh, no, Arctotherium. Oh, so Arctotherium. Arctotherium.
I did not come across that bear.
No, this bear was huge. So estimated standing height was like 3.4 to 4.3 meters. But basically, when it's on all fours, it would be like roughly 2 meters, about just six.
Whoa.
Yeah. And that's on all fours.
Whoa. I mean, that's insane, because the elephants would, well, the mammoth one that I came across was 3.5 meters from the neck down. So that bear would, you know, have a fair chance to go up against the woolly mammoth, maybe, if it so chose. I just find it interesting because it does present like an alternate history that is somewhat believable. And I think without us interrupting the system for these megafauna in North America, like the perfect breeding grounds for them to kind of like survive and have every chance of success in surviving,
yeah,
and thriving, basically, you know, it would be believable that after the Vikings tried going over,
they got too scared.
In the 1000s, they got really, really scared.
Oh, Ronavi.
Just for comparison, a polar bear, which is the biggest current living bear, or the biggest extant bear.
Good word.
1 to 1.5 meters on all fours. So it is.
Wow.
So yeah, this bear is packing
it. Yeah, it's pretty big.
But the sad thing is that I don't think we're going to find many polar bears even now that's going to reach that maximum kind of size, are we?
Undoubtedly.
We ruin everything.
We do. Do you know about the glyptodonts? Oh, the better name for that. The big boy armadillos.
The glyptodont. How big are we talking?
Yeah, they were like the size of Volkswagen Beetles, weren't they?
Yeah, small houses. No, yeah, they were basically, yeah, Volkswagen Beetles. They were pretty dense, pretty crazy, actually.
Thick as shit.
A few different species, actually. Like the ones that went extinct in South America, there's six, apparently, that they found, or six debated species, and then...
Ooh.
I think there's one or two northern ones. I'm not really sure. I don't want to be quoted on that, because I'm not... No.
Okay.
Your shout out to the other week, though, because your unicorn, the real life unicorn, would have been part of the megafauna that went extinct.
Yeah, I think this would be a more attainable version of the unicorn mythos, I guess. Like, you know, big animals from across the ocean. Like, you could make a pretty cool movie out of that, I think. I just like the idea that these big houses and big, like, kingdoms would be sending people over. I mean, I don't like it, but I do like it in terms of just the narrative.
Capture them all. I want them here, Gerald.
There would be some names coming out of that. Sabretooth son. That would be like a surname that would emerge.
Come back with one of those 2 meter fangs around their neck. A big necklace.
Do you reckon there'd be any activists?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Do you know how the rich go to Africa and stuff and go hunt lions, go big game hunting?
Maybe we'd do that.
We'd be kept under the radar. Maybe we wouldn't know the atrocities that are actually happening. But I would like to think that we would actually, rather than killing them, I mean, imagine how fun it would be to have like a mammoth pet or a giant otter that you just chill with. I think it would be so much better. Like, well, that armadillo.
It goes back to kind of Danny's previous topic, which was talking about what if we had, what was the actual phraseology for that again, Danny? Like synonymous relationships?
Symbiotic.
Relationship. Oh, symbiotic relationships.
Symbiotic. That was it.
Yeah, mutualistic relationships.
There's a lot of opportunity for that to occur if we had discovered these megafauna later and if they had survived the Ice Age. I mean, there's so many problems with it, which is why the Swasher guy mentions climate magic as a thing in this like alternate universe, because there's a point where the North American continent became very much wooded and like forested, and that would have put away a lot of these megafauna that were used to these colder, kind of harsher landscapes. So maybe a lot of migration would have happened to Canada, but I think there would have been a lot of fierce competition. But I like to think most of them survive in this alternate scenario because, you know, that's fun.
It's basically the movie's Ice Age. Do you know in the fourth one, or the third one, where they find the dinosaurs again and they find Rudy?
Yeah.
Rudy. Would it be that? Or maybe we would do that with North America. We'd find this land of the lost beasts and we'd find all these megafauna just in a cave somewhere.
Did you come across
sick
camelops on your research, anyone?
No.
Camelops.
What is a camelop?
An extinct genus of camel that used to live in the western North America, ranging from Alaska to Mexico. It's basically a giant camel. A big giant camel.
What was in the air back in the day? Why was everything mega?
Because there was a lot of vegetation and there's just competition to be big. It's better for you. I don't know why.
Mm. Would being big also help them through really cold conditions?
Yeah. Depends if they've got fat stores. Bigger animals retain heat more so, yeah.
Yeah. Surface to volume ratio.
Just to say, for those who don't know, during this time, like, this is what is called the Quaternary period and the late Pleistocene, which was 1.8 million years ago to, is that right? 12,000 years ago?
Say it with the surety if you're going to say it at all. You may as well. That's right as fuck.
But anyway, there's 16 glaciations during the whole Quaternary period, which means just a lot of ice at this time. So yeah, these animals would have had to have a lot of vegetation, get big or go home and die kind of thing. So yeah, I think nowadays we would have, if there are any that survived our mass pillaging in the 1400s with the Great Beast Rush, I'd like to think we'd have endangered animal kind of retreats, because they certainly would be endangered.
Yeah. Yeah, I would like to think that we would try and keep them alive. But so going back to what you're talking about with the climate change, they enjoyed the cold. Could they have not evolved to be bold? Like how the elephant is the hairless mammoth.
Probably.
Would we just have really big hairless animals?
But I don't know how quickly that would have happened though. I don't think
10,000 years. Yeah. Well, how long did it take us to go? I suppose it took us about 100,000 years to get hairless, didn't it?
Yeah, I don't think we'd become bald quick enough. I think climate would win that race, to be honest.
Mm.
Over versus evolution in terms of losing the hair, yeah. Unless there was a really odd mutation that just happened to favour a certain number and they survived, and then it wasn't recessive, it was dominant, and then somehow got managed to be passed on, and then ding, 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 you have the winning recipe for non-extinct.
Is good.
Ding, ding, ding. One prize to you.
Ding, 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 ding.
You win, not death. Well done.
Yeah, that's a pretty good prize. Pretty good prize.
I smell
victory. Livable.
I'll live with it.
Why did you concentrate on North American megafauna?
Literally, I like that guy's comment so much. It made sense to kind of keep them on a continent.
I'm going
to
talk about it. Yeah, fair enough.
I just want to factualize it and make it reality.
Pretty much I chose mine because I want a tail. I wonder if everyone has a tail.
I want a tail.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah, the opposite thinking went into mine. This is what I do not want to happen. Which would be for us to lose, or we never had, our taste or smell. That's my topic.
No.
Yeah, so if anyone knows, it's the olfactory system. The system that connects smell and taste. 70% of your taste actually comes from the aromas of smell and also the aromas in your mouth. I don't know if you're aware, but you have a little bit of tissue, similar tissue to what you have in your nose. You have a small patch of tissue at the kind of top of your throat, which detects all these aromas and then sends those signals to your brain. Like what happens in your nose, like at the top of your nose, closest to the brain, like it's a very thin bit of like tissue.
That's sensory tissue.
Yeah, the blood-brain barrier. And that is where like the smells hit the chemoreceptors, and then that sends and triggers a bunch of cascade signaling, and that's how your smell and taste works. So
does that trigger like dopamine?
Can't remember exactly which neurotransmitter it is, but might be dopamine.
You can get dopamine off certain types of food, but it'd be interesting to know if it's like directly linked to the olfactory.
Yeah, famously, well, I'm sure you're aware yourselves, like, smell is, well, for me, is the strongest thing of like reminding. You smell something, you're like, whoa, taking it straight back to the moment when you first smelled that, or like where you used to smell that. I would think it would be a bit shit, wouldn't it? But some people currently do live without these. I'll give you some. They've got some quite good names, the disorders of losing taste. You've got I'm gonna butcher these. Anosmia.
Say that again.
Anosmia. Anosmia.
One more time.
Anosmia. Anosmia.
There you go. Anosmia.
The complete inability to detect odors. Then you've got hyposmia.
One more time.
Is the reduced.
Stop it. Let him talk.
No, I actually can't hear him.
Hyposmia. That's the reduced ability to detect odors. Parousmia. And then phantosmia is smelling stuff that's not there. So people already do suffer from smelling and tasting disorders. it can affect you quite badly. It's like for your mental health, apparently.
What does the suffix omia mean in all those disorders?
Omia. I'm not sure. Good question. Omia. It's because, yeah, omias are quite common, aren't they, for disorders. I think it just means not normal, maybe. I don't know. Don't hold me to that one.
It's a good question,
yeah,
isn't it?
But yeah.
I'd like to know the answer. Omias. If you know, tell omia. Someone. Then that may get to me at some point.
What would you think the world would be like if we had never evolved to have the olfactory system? Like you say, we wouldn't be eating all the megafauna.
Well, the Great British Bake Off would never be a thing. Gordon Ramsay would be out of business.
There would be a lot of gas explosions.
Yeah, what would we occupy our time with if we didn't have all these cooking shows?
What will Michelin put its stars on? Because there won't be any restaurants.
Tires, mate. They'll stick to their tires.
This is some nice feeling mushy food. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I can't taste it, but the texture feels great. Wow.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think everything would be based on
how it feels in your mouth.
Texture, like stuff like porridge would not exist. Like it would. Why wouldn't porridge exist? So something like a nice porridge. Well, porridge notoriously isn't the nicest sensation. It's not that you don't think, porridge. Ooh, love that.
Yeah, but I don't think you don't think about that for the taste. So I imagine there'd be quite a lot of porridges because you could just have a combination of things which turns into mush, which are really good for you because you can't taste it anyway.
Like, you just blend it up, you just slurp it down.
Just streamline the process.
I like the warmth of porridge.
I like the warmth. The only thing you feel.
Oh, you're a cock.
Old classic Dominic.
Ding, 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 ding.
I opened you straight up for that one, pal. All right.
Oh, that's what she said.
But, yeah, I mean, you'd be like tasting temperature in a weirdly, that's the wrong way of saying it, but that's kind of what you'd be focusing on, wouldn't you?
It's a good name for a game. Tasting temperature,
purely based cooking. In this world you have cooking games because it's to occupy.
You know the blind taste test?
That's undercooked.
Do you know those restaurants you go where you don't have, where you go in blindfolded? It's like you're supposed to increase the olfactory setting. If you did that, it'd just be really temperature based. Like, this is like specifically 67 degrees Celsius.
Yeah. You'd have weird temperature competitions. Yeah.
67.7. Woof. Would we just not have thermometers? We'd just put things in our mouths.
Mm.
If you want to work out how warm something is, just put it in your mouth and, oh, wow, got that one.
I would just imagine so many cases of salmonella, if that were the case. Like, just people getting chicken really wrong.
Just because you can't taste it doesn't mean it makes it any less poisonous or damaging to the body if you put it in your mouth.
How would you detect problems if you didn't have the olfactory system? Because smell is such a big giveaway.
Yeah.
You'd tell because you'd be sick, or like you would be ill.
Yeah, you'd be sick.
But yeah, the food system-wise or olfactory-wise, if you're smelling something to see if it's off, you're not going to know. Mm-hmm. So like, say if you had some chicken breast, you give them the old smell. You don't know if they smell good or bad because you don't smell anything. You're just going to fry them up and cook them and eat them.
So we'd be very tame, do you reckon? We'd keep our food very safe. So like,
I think we'd eat a lot of plants. I think we'd keep things a lot safer.
We might have a
world. Sorry, I was just going to say our vision would still be good for it.
And also I think that we would probably be a lot more vegans and plant-based diets because the fat in the meats is like the tasty. And that's the main draw to why people, well, not everyone's vegan, is because you have that. The fat. So maybe the world again would be a lot greener, a lot more healthy.
I feel like you were saying that you're going to be more reliant on vision or it's going to have increased, but we're not going to be reliant on that as much because we're going to need a system for when we put things in our mouth. So the way we were just going down the heat route, then we'd have just higher sensations for thermodetection, and also just it'll increase how sensitive our skin is in terms of like people touching us or stuff like that, because we're losing taste and smell, so we're losing senses. So all those neurons in our brain that are dedicated to that would be dedicated to something else as well. So I think it would be a physical sensation over sight.
You think? Yeah, I definitely think that the other senses might get boosted as well. Hearing, I think hearing would be.
This food does not sound right. Are you sure it's correct?
This food sounds off to me.
That would be all over the Google reviews. Mm-hmm. This place just doesn't sound right to me. It's just bloody awful. Jesus Christ.
Honestly, that creme brulee sounded amazing.
Yeah. Eating like a cold schnapple, that is possibly one of the nicest things. Like crisp. It's not crunchy, but you know what I mean. What would be your favourite food, do you reckon?
I'm trying to think. Probably maybe ice cream.
I think just straight gravy.
Straight gravy.
Just gravy.
Just thick goodness down my throat.
Yeah, I suppose.
I think I'd like want more things that are firm. I think I'll try and stay away from the kind of liquidy, goopy side and try and have like this actual food with substance.
Do you reckon crisps will be as good? Because notoriously, people enjoy crisps because it's quite a taste sensation. Like, it's a bland food, but in terms of eating and texture, it's just like it says, a crisp. It's just crunchy. Crisp.
That's actually a really interesting way of looking at crisps. They are just vessels and transporters of flavouring.
Yeah, yeah, of course they are.
But you can still get full off of crisps. Crisps.
But the whole enjoyment would be taken out of it. It wouldn't be a leisurely thing.
Crisps.
You're purely eating for the functionality of it.
You reckon rather than everything being like crisps, you'd have like crisps, smooths, like crunchies, and like you'd have names of things based on how they feel in your mouth.
Yeah.
You just describe it by onomatopoeia.
Onomatopoeia food.
A crunch. Yeah, that would be crunchy.
That's a cold and squelchy.
That's a hot gloop. A hot squidge.
Mushrooms would be like, yeah, squidge. That's a good one. That would be...
squidge. I'd have a lukewarm squidge, please.
Wait, was that a mid-tier warm, or was that like a really nice, smooth kind of squidge?
Yeah, punk band name, Tepid Squidge. Great.
I was just going to ask, okay, so I have like a lot of food, and then there's the kind of boundary where I'm like, oh, I feel satisfied after all that food. Like, is that still going to be the same kind of feeling, or is it like going to be mostly dictated by the olfactory system that I have that reaction? Do you know that?
Well, there is something called satiety. Yeah, satiety. Satiety. And that's basically is what...
One more time?
Not falling for that, babe. Yeah, that is basically the...
Satiety? Fool me once?
Yeah, that's basically the feeling of being full up through... You're getting bored of the taste, if that makes sense. So you can have saturation satiety. Basically, when you get bored of the taste of food, that's when you kind of feel full. So yeah, like you could potentially be able to eat more and more and more, but... From my experience, the whole reason why I thought of this, not to bring up the dreaded C word, but from getting COVID, drop the C bomb. it was terrible. Like, it was like not being able to taste. Obviously, I got quite lucky and just lost my taste, but that was not a fun experience. It was very, very bizarre, like having a glimmer of taste. In the distance, I could see it. If it was a really strong flavor, I could. It didn't make you not want to eat, but I guess that is because I had the understanding of food before. So in a world where we'd never ever had it, I think it would just be we have to redefine the standards of what is good food.
Yeah, culinary experience would be completely different.
Would we all be slim and trim, you reckon?
Ooh, I don't know. Well, maybe not, because we wouldn't know.
Most of us.
Oh God, I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
Yeah, we wouldn't be addicted to sugar, would we?
People stop seeking food for pleasure. Yeah.
Well.
I mean, we might be addicted to sugar, but we'd be able to notice that it's just sugar rather than like, oh, I just like chocolate. You'd be like, no, I'm eating this thing that tastes the same as everything else because it doesn't taste of anything, but I happen to be eating a lot more of it and it's not good for me. So why is that?
You would still be getting the secondary effects, won't you? Like, ooh, I'm getting a sugar buzz right now. I'm getting really hyper.
Yeah,
and then
that'll be so weird.
Anything else, like caffeine as well. It would, it would probably make coffee better for some people because people absolutely detest the taste.
I mean, I do find it a bit... bitter.
You hate coffee taste?
I don't hate it. I don't hate it.
I love coffee taste.
I just I'm impartial to it.
I thought Macklin said he hated it, and I was like, whoa.
No.
I love it.
Cappuccino with oat milk, that's what I live on. I love it so much. But people don't like the taste.
Black coffee all the way.
I can definitely see you having that potent coffee dad breath. I can definitely see you having that.
Like, I like my coffee straight.
You know, in the morning where it's like...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no more bad breath. Score!
Do you know what's it called? Halitosis is where you have bad breath. And that is a sign that you've got something like your teeth are rotting or like this. No one would know.
That word would never exist.
Halitosis.
Halitosis would never exist.
That'd be really bad. That would be terrible. But being a dentist would be a better job because then you don't have to sense... all that kind of terrible side effect stuff with
true, smell,
and taste of things.
The name for the disorder of losing your taste is actually, sorry, I forgot to mention this, agusia, A-G-E-U-S-I, Agusia.
One more time.
And that is the actually losing your taste, which is actually more common. It's more common for people to lose their taste than lose their smell. Quickly, let's talk about that. What methods do you think you can lose your smell and taste by? Shout some out.
You can probably burn the back of your throat.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, burning, yeah. Damage to the receptors.
I don't know.
Chopping your tongue off. I thought chopping your tongue off.
That's quite extreme, though.
Yeah.
Would we? Because your tongue is used for tasting, isn't it? Would we have tongues, do you reckon? Would we have a need for it?
We'd still evolve to have it.
You need it for talking as well.
You think?
Yeah.
Yeah, because the tongues didn't evolve. I know bloody reptiles have all kinds of bloody tongues.
The chameleon.
Like, snakes use it to, like, the chameleon's a mad one. It's got like a... And the frog, they've got like a tongue. Yeah. It's like a prehensile. Yeah, it is a prehensile tongue, actually. A giraffe's got a prehensile tongue. But there'll be a specific, more specific names for it than that, because they have a wide variation of tongue-specific tasks. And yeah, what I was going to say was snake. It uses it to detect smell in the air and like just lick up and down.
Do you actually know how that works?
Yeah, I do.
How does it work?
It's got like two, it's split into two, isn't it? So it waves its tongue in the air and it detects like smell particles in the air. When it brings it back into its mouth, it brings it down like a groove, one for each side of the tongue. And whichever tongue has denser particles, it means that the smell's coming from that direction.
Wow.
Yeah, it's not actually the tongue that is the sensor. The tongue is just the device to get the chemicals back into the mouth. It's quite mad.
Exactly.
Oh, so it's like the detector, but not like the full sensory shebang kind of thing.
Ah, yeah.
That's interesting.
Pretty cool, isn't it?
So that's one example of not... Like, do they not have taste buds then? Snakes.
This is what... I'm sure they probably do.
Yeah. I don't know, though, because like they eat things whole, don't they? So they probably will taste things, but I'm not sure to what extreme, though, because they don't really need it.
Is that what we would do? We just... have a dislocate our jaw and just be out there inhale food.
Oh, that was a nice sensation.
Yeah, it's like that time when you managed to fit your fist in your mouth, Danny.
When I was scared of getting on air at Alton Towers because I used to be scared of rides, I managed to get my fist in my mouth. Shout out Jake Speakman if you ever listen. I'm scared the shit out of you.
So, yeah, that would be interesting.
Yeah, I can't do it now. I used to get taken the piss out of when I was at Explorers because that story came out, so... Sad times, bringing up some bullied past, and I'm joking. Those guys were top guys.
You sound traumatized, Danny. Do you need to talk about it?
I'm bitter, mate. No, I used to put my fist in my mouth. Yeah, no, little Danny used to be scared of rides. Fun fact.
Understandable. Disney World scared the hell out of me.
My first ever proper ride was at Chessington. If you ever, been there,
Chessington World of Adventure.
Yes, that's the one.
All right, back to taste. Let's go back to taste.
Still not. I've never been a fan of Oblivion. I always go on it, but I'm just like,
how are you not talking about taste? I keep talking. Let's go back to taste. Come on, goddammit.
Would we go on theme park rides instead of tasting things? Discuss.
You make one off comment about a theme park ride, and all of a sudden, ooh, I've not been on a ride in a while.
yeah, but how weird would that be though? Going back to the different smelling disorders, the phantosmia.
What was that?
That is where phantosmia.
You said it. You said it very well. It sounded like a type of yogurt. Phantosmia.
Phantosmia.
But yeah, that's like where you smell things that aren't there, which I thought was the weirdest one personally. That would be.
It sounds like it sounds like a form of schizophrenia for your nose.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah.
Oh, what's the one where you smell colours and stuff? Where you mix up your sensory organ, your sensory inputs?
Oh, it begins with S. It's not there. It's not there.
Google it. Google it, and then Mia call this out.
Synesthesia is where you have everything.
Say that. I say that again one more time.
Synesthesia, Danny. Yeah. You dick.
Wait, what was that?
Synesthesia is like, that is so interesting, just how everything can warp, but it's so varied from individual to individual.
The people that would have the rare mutation where they could actually have the olfactory system, I think this would be a pretty bleak world for them to be in, because obviously nobody would be caring about the taste of stuff, like the taste or the smell. So maybe everyone would absolutely stink. Like, do you know how you can smell that, like, you are dirty?
No reason for aftershave or anything or deodorant, would there? Like, there'd be... Giorgio Armani or fucking Chanel. There'd be no these weird ass
Chanel
adverts on TV that have nothing to do with the
a man on a bike driving the, on a desert. Do you want to smell like this?
Beautiful man with shirt off. Attractive woman also with shirt off. Smell like us and you can be as attractive and shirtless as us.
We'd still need to wash though.
But yeah, but I just don't think you would have the trigger. Like you can when you smell yourself or like, you know, you smell downstairs and it's like, oof, Jesus Christ. Like that is a trigger for you to shower. Everyone would be stanky.
It would be like playing Skyrim. Like you kind of walk around a village and they're like, gosh, you look like death. When was the last time you washed? The people were just kind of like, you can't smell or anything because obviously it's a visual game. But I always felt like, how? I don't even feel like I'm ill or anything. Obviously nothing's showing up here, but...
I've just been in a dungeon for 14 fucking hours and you have this shit to say to me?
Take it up with my lawyer. I've had enough of your shit.
Okay, let's wrap it up. Let's bring those three together.
Before we wrap up, just being able to smell fire and stuff, I thought as we evolved, like obviously you smell the smoke first. So just a small thing, like when there would be a forest fire back in the day, back in yonder,
yeah,
would we be more in danger? Could we potentially have been...
I think you'd see the forest fire, to be honest.
I think there'd be a lot more house fires.
I think there would be a lot of gas explosions.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Have you seen the hole in Turkmenistan?
Yes, yeah, I have. The gates of hell, isn't it?
Yeah, the gates of hell. They could smell, these geologists could smell gas coming. I don't know what their reasoning was. They decided to throw a grenade.
Was it a grenade?
They decided to throw a grenade or something, and then the grenade blew up. Now there's this massive, massive hole. Okay, it's not massive, I'd say like what? 20 meters wide, 30 meters wide, and it's just being perpetually on fire for the last 30 years. Because the natural gas is just constantly on fire.
Do you have any idea how big it was before they threw a grenade into the hole?
I don't know. I can't remember exactly how big it was. But it's definitely got a lot bigger.
It is massive, though. It is huge.
That is kind of hilarious. Mm-hmm. Imagine if you're talking about there's no olfactory human world, and then they were just playing around with fire around there. I think that there would be a lot more instances of people just mm-hmm. dying because of that misstep. Mm-hmm.
Well, do you know when they used to take a budgie into the mines because when it passed out... A canary.
Canary, yeah.
When it passed out, would we still have to have methods like that? Canaries in our kitchen if we're using gas stoves. And if the canary passes out, it's like, I left the stove on again, Cheryl, fuck.
That's the third one this week.
One of the biggest industries, big canary.
The best canary yet. Can survive 3 passings out in a day.
This canary's robust. So yeah, should we wrap this up?
Yeah, let's bring them all together.
Let's take all 3 topics and lace them into a bow, and then that's our conclusion. Sound effect, please, Mia!
So let's put in 1 prehensile tail, a whole load of megafauna, and a little less of smelling things.
I think it would be a very rugged world. There'd be a lot more animals.
Definitely a lot bigger.
Yeah, they'd be a lot bigger because we wouldn't be eating them because we wouldn't really care about the taste. Because we're in trees all the time, we'd be quite dirty, and because we couldn't smell anything, we'd be just kind of like very hippy-dippy, kind of rugged-looking world.
Yeah, especially with our tails, we'd be jumping about. And especially if we'd tamed quite a lot of these megafauna, because we'd have larger cattle if we needed to farm cattle, but I think we'd just have them as there. We'd use them as tools more than anything else. So like if we needed to get from further afield rather than walking or swinging through our arboreal mega structures, we'll just take the ground sloth, we'll just take the armadillo over.
That's our taxis.
Yeah.
The ground sloth would have been a bit of a problem for us though. Its talons were so big, it would have probably wanted to fight.
Mate, there's fucking loads of ground sloth. It wasn't just one, there was a many a big boy. So yeah, there probably would have been a few, and it depends where you were in the world, wouldn't it?
What was the animal that coexists with the elephant? Is it like a bird? I'm trying to remember.
The ones that eats all the bugs off.
Oh, the nuthatch.
Yeah.
Common nuthatch. It might not be common, but there's a nuthatch that eats a lot of things on animals.
Maybe our ancestors who had no olfactory system would have just jumped on some woolly mammoths, and why not rhinoceroses? Rhinoceroses. I don't know if that's...
Rhinoceroses.
And they couldn't taste anything, and they were just like, this is sustaining, this is good, and this gets me places.
So we'd just be basically symbiotic with the megafauna.
Yeah.
That could be quite interesting, yeah.
Macklin, I think it's a crash of rhinos or a charge. I think the you can swap that if you
to
want
the book.
To.
Okay.
What was the group name for unicorns?
A blessing of unicorns.
A blessing of unicorns.
That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. We're trying to think of megafauna collective nouns.
Yeah, yeah. A stampede of woolly mammoths.
Gathering of ground sloths.
A roll of armadillos.
Maybe an avalanche of armadillos.
An avalanche of armadillos.
Yeah, there'd be so many. Oh my god.
We could also live in this world pretty nicely because we couldn't smell all the excrement of all the megafauna. Just
oh yeah, we could use it as a crash mat to land in from the trees.
I think yeah, we would just be very dirty in this world. Dirty humans.
Yeah.
I think would we be a lot more diseased then if we're just using piles of shit to land in.
It's all organic, Matt. Everything we'll eat, organic. Don't worry. We'll be fine. We'll probably live until 30, 40 years old. That'll be a minimum maximum lifespan.
Mate, we can eat what we can eat specifically the things that are good for us. We don't need to eat anything that's bad for us.
Mm. Well, no, it is interesting because like there's a lot of thoughts that with us eating meat, that's brought our kind of lifespan down. I mean, I can't cite anything, but like that's obviously if we were just sticking to vegetation, we might be able to process and live much longer. Mm. I don't know. So these our prehensile tails would be swinging us through life pretty nicely without any smells and.
Thing is, our established way of living became so reliant on our prehensile tails, losing your prehensile tail or be it chopped off by a fucking fellow gang member or eaten.
I was about to say. Yakuza style, just katana blade.
Rather than the tip of your finger, it's the tip of your prehensile tail.
Yeah, do you know how like you were saying about the Vikings when you chopped the beards off the Vikings, it was like dishonor. Yeah. Maybe if you had your tail removed, that was like dishonor. You no longer could swing like a free bird.
Like, I imagine there'd be certain religions that circumcise the prehensile tail, like they just cut off the tip so you can't really use it properly. So like there'll be a batch of people that were partial prehensile and like, this is the more natural way of living. It's what God wanted us to do.
So with the prehensile tail, do we have like we have bones in our tail, right?
That's yeah, yeah, happen. Yeah. After the tailbone, your spine would just continue going. So it'd just be like an extension of your spine.
So archaeologists would be like looking through caves, and they'd be like, "These savages were cutting off tails for no apparently good reason. It was just punishment. It was war crimes, in fact."
There'd be archaeologists or paleontologists being like, "It's a completely separate species. You're so stupid.
Completely separate genus."
But this one had 14 extra vertebrae, and this one had 12. Surely they're the same.
Those debates would be heated, my goodness. So we've wrapped it up. Now we're zipping it up. Yeah, liking that.
We're zipping it.
Going
nice
to send
hand
it.
Gestures. Mm. If you liked what you listened to here, if you made it to this point, give us a comment or something on social media. Follow us on WCHB_podcast. And follow us on Spotify or Anchor.
Also on Facebook, which is the What Could Have Been podcast.
We'll be getting Twitter soon, I think. Anything else you want to plug?
Mia, for editing this episode. Great job, Mia.
The faithful fourth member.
Thanks, Mia. You sounded really good. All those sound effects, brilliant. But I wouldn't have picked any other ones myself. Perfect.
All right. Until next time.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much.
All right. Think what could have been.
What could have been.